Welcome back, everyone, to Campfire Tales. Tonight, we have a horrifying story of three kids who venture off into the woods and come across something they have no idea what it is and why it is there. And of course, being the curiosity that kills the cat, it's not the only thing that kills in this story. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss tonight's story. If you like true and creepypasta scary stories, make sure to subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up. Now, let's get spooky. This all started during the autumn of 2004, when myself and two of my best friends, Tommy Ellis and Jamie Cambion, were walking home from school. We were walking through the woods that occupied the area between our homes and our middle school. In the woods, there was a small memorial dedicated to a local World War I hero by the name of Grover Gunther. Grover had apparently saved the lives of at least 10 soldiers who had fallen injured in no man's land during the war. He had apparently dragged each of them, one by one, back to the safety of the trenches. And from the moment that memorial was put in place, the youth of our town began to call those woods the Grove. It was a name that would stick for years. We spent a lot of time hanging out in the grove. It was a bigger set of woods than you'd imagine. You could get lost in there for hours if you truly didn't know where you were going. But my friends and I had really loved the grove, had found it a natural, serene place to be. No one gave you homework in the grove. No one pushed you into the locker in the grove. No one yelled at you for not doing your chores in the grove. No, not in the grove. The rest of the world could get bent, but the Grove was rad as hell. "Okay, go long," Tommy had said that day, corking back the football he held in his hands. I ran forward, pretending to run a post route, pretending the trees in the way were defenders blocking me. I spent a lot of time wondering, what if Tommy had thrown a perfect pass, hit me square in the chest? Or what if he had underthrown me? How different would our lives have been? Maybe we would have never have found what we had found that day. We would have just kept walking the other way. But Tommy didn't throw a perfect pass. He overthrew me by a long shot. I watched as the football sailed over my head, hitting a tree, then bouncing away off into the distance. I heard what sounded like a squirrel or a rabbit darting from the football's path. "Tommy, I'm sorry to say, but I didn't think a professional football career is in your future." That was Jamie who said that. Jamie was British, if you could believe it or not. He had moved from London to our little town just over a year before and had become fast friends with Tommy and I. "You know, my dear Watson," Tommy said in a horrible British accent. "I think you might be onto something." "Have you ever considered playing real football?" Jamie said, motioning with his feet. "That's soccer," Tommy said, dropping the accent. "And no, that's disgusting." Already their voices were fading behind me as I went after the football. I came to an area and there was a squirrel hanging onto one of the trees, leering at me with accusing eyes, as if I was the one that had thrown the ball. I went a little further up ahead and came to a small clearing, and that's where I found the football and something else. It was a dollhouse. The house was modeled after a two-story home. It was painted pink with a gray roof, but it wasn't a bright pink. It was a dull pink, dull like an old piece of gum you'd find under a school desk. Much of the house's paint was chipped, and it was stained with something black. Dirt? The windows actually had glass or some kind of plastic paneling, so you couldn't stick your hands through. The house looked old, too. Used. This wasn't a dollhouse that someone just bought at Toys R Us and then ditched it in the Grove. Not recently, anyways. At least, it didn't look that way. No. As strange as it sounds, the dollhouse not only looked old, but also perfectly natural sitting in the clearing, as if it had sprouted out from the ground itself. There was something odd about the clearing as well. It was a bright autumn day, yet there was a dimness to the clearing, as if an overcast of clouds hovered over it. But when you looked up, you saw nothing but perfect blue sky. All I'm saying, I could hear Jamie coming up from behind me. He was talking to Tommy. Is that in our football, we actually use our feet. Yeah, Tommy said, coming up from behind Jamie. And it's boring as hell. Don't you agree, Will? They both stopped as they joined me in the clearing. Now the two of them were looking at the dollhouse with the same confused look that I had on my face. What the hell? Tommy said, chuckling a little. Is that a frickin' dollhouse? Looks like it, I said. Weird, huh? Should we burn it? Tommy said, grinning. He pulled out a lighter, which he had stolen from his dad. He was going through a bit of a pyro phase at the time. Nothing serious. He had just burned some of his old G.I. Joe toys and the like. A week prior, Jamie and I had watched Tommy burn one of his action figures, while he was laughing intentionally like an over-the-top James Bond villain. It had made us all fall over in laughter. Still, Jamie and I had already made it clear we weren't into that pyro stuff, especially not in the Grove. No burning, I said. Not in the Grove, remember? And I stuck my hand out like a parent. Tommy chuckled and threw the lighter at me. No fun, Tommy said with a weary smile. And the lighter fluid, I said, again like a parent scolding a child. Tommy signed and took out a small flask, which he had also stolen from his father and filled it up with lighter fluid. I put both the lighter and the flask into my coat pockets. Tommy shrugged and said, "Some things deserve to get burnt, that is all." Jamie approached the dollhouse and looked over it quizzically. Tommy had called him Watson, jokingly, but now Jamie seemed to take on the appearance of Sherlock Holmes. He bent over the dollhouse, rubbing his chin. He walked around it, taking in every nook and cranny. All he needed was a magnifying glass and pipe, and he would have a complete roll. Then taking both his hands, and he grabbed the dollhouse and began to pull, as if he was trying to rip the house apart. "Jamie, what are you doing?" I said, now with an even more confused look on my face.
"Why won't it open?"
Jamie said out of breath. He stopped pulling. "What do you mean?" I said. "Well, it's a dollhouse, right? Dollhouses are supposed to open." He was right. Dollhouses were segmented and would normally split open so that kids could actually play inside of them. "Look here," Jamie said. And he pointed to something on the dollhouse. Tommy and I approached. Jamie was pointing at a line that ran across the top of the dollhouse. It was clearly the seam where the dollhouse was supposed to pull apart. But no matter how much Jamie pulled, it would not open. "Well, somebody opened it," I said, pointing to one of the windows on the side of the house. The window looked into a back room, and in the room was a small figurine of a man who sat in a plastic chair. The figurine wore a black suit with a black tie. Its face was completely blank. No mouth, no nose, no eyes. Just a blank, white face. "How else is that going to get in there?" "You're right," Jamie said. "And look, there's toy furniture in the other rooms. Someone put that stuff in there."
"Guys, who cares, really?"
Tommy said. It's just a stupid dollhouse. Are we really not going to burn it? No, Jamie and I said in unison, and then we all broke out in laughter. Then Jamie bent down and opened the front door of the dollhouse. Maybe there is something. Jamie put his hand through the front door, and then Jamie was gone. There was no popping sound, no whoosh or loud effect. One moment Jamie had been there, and the next he had completely disappeared. Tommy and I stared at one another, not knowing what had just occurred. Dumb shock covered our faces. Fear, too. Jamie? I said stupidly, looking around, as if he had ran off, even though I'd clearly just seen him disappear out of thin air. What the hell? Tommy was just saying nervously. Where did Jamie go? I don't know, I said, shaking my head. We began to back away from the dollhouse as if it was a bomb that might blow up at any second. Tommy began to do the same, and then I did hear something. It was faint, but it was the sound of tapping. It was coming from the dollhouse. I bent down, and what I saw made my eyes bulge. It was Jamie. He was in the dollhouse. He was standing at one of the windows on the first floor. He was knocking on it. He was knocking very hard. It was all too bizarre to take in. Jamie had somehow shrunk down and now was inside of a frickin' dollhouse. Jamie stopped knocking when he saw he got my attention and a smile broke out on his face. He waved. I stupidly waved back as if I was seeing him across the hallway at school. Tommy had bent down as well. No frickin' way, Tommy said. Jamie, is that you? Jamie nodded and winced a little as well, as if the sound of Tommy's voice was too loud. Jesus, this is like that movie Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or something, I said. What the hell do we do? Jamie began mouthing something, but we couldn't make it out. He sounded faint, far away, muffled. Jamie then pointed to his right, towards the front door of the dollhouse, which was still open. Jamie then began gesturing his hand, pulling it back and forth. I get it, Tommy said. I get it, Jamie. And the scared expression on Tommy's face was replaced by a kind of mad glee. The same kind of expression that appears on a kid's face when he suddenly understands some secret or realizes how to beat the final boss on a video game. Watch this, Will, Tommy said to me. And then Tommy reached forward and put his hand through the front door of the dollhouse. And then Tommy was gone. Vanished out of thin air, just like Jamie had. And then a few moments later, Tommy was standing in the window with Jamie. The two of them began high-fiving each other and jumping up and down. I could faintly hear their cheers and laughter, but it was still really muffled and sounded far away. Then they turned to me and gestured towards the front door. I began to move my hand towards it and then stopped for a brief moment. All of this was hard to take in, but even more so that a rational voice in the back of my head was telling me this was all wrong, unnatural. That we should not be playing Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with this dollhouse in the grove. But I was overwhelmed by curiosity. And part of me thought that perhaps I was just dreaming. And there was also that terrifying feeling of being left out. Isn't that what drives so many kids to do the dumbest things? The idea of missing out on something. I couldn't help but notice how excited and the awe Jamie and Tommy seemed to be. I stuck my hand through the front door. There was an odd sensation, kind of like when your stomach drops at the top of a roller coaster. And then I was no longer kneeling in the grassy surface of the clearing. I was in the foyer of the house. a very large and expensive looking house. There was a grand staircase just up ahead, and to my right and left there were different entryways. Fancy portraits of paintings adorned the walls of the foyer, the kind of portraits whose eyes always seemed to follow you. From the outside of the dollhouse seemed fake, plastic-looking, a broken and dirty-looking toy house, but on the inside, it seemed as real as any house. But it seemed too old, very old. I heard the sound of running and laughter. Seconds later, Jamie and Tommy came running through the entryway and then were high-fiving each other.
Dude, this is insane. Holy crap, can you believe this? This is nuts. We shrunk. It's like that movie. This house is huge. How is this even possible? We're inside. Inside.
Our mad delight consumed us. We had discovered something incredible, something you only read about in fairy tales. We ran up and down the foyer, hooting like dumb children at a sleepover. The more we cheered and laughed, the more our excitement and curiosity seemed to grow. Some kind of mad fever had taken over us. We began to explore the house. It was so much bigger on the inside. It was two stories, but there was an exorbitant amount of rooms and hallways. They were furnished with the best-looking beds, chairs, and desks. None of it looked like plastic furniture we saw from the outside looking in. And when we jumped on the beds and sat on the chairs, they felt real and very comfortable. There was even a library with hundreds of books inside. And when we took the books off the shelves and actually opened them, it wasn't blank pages that met us. They were filled with words and stories that we had never even heard of before. The books were real, too. It was all real. And when we looked out the windows, we saw the grove, now looking so much larger than it had before. "When I saw you guys out there," Jamie had said during our exploration of the house, "you guys looked like giants, and your voices were too loud. It hurt my ears." As if to emphasize Jamie's point, a squirrel ran past one of the windows, its feet making large thudding sounds. The squirrel looked huge and terrifying, and I was very glad when it was gone. "This is so weird," I said, staring out of the window.
"It's amazing," Jamie said, wide-eyed.
"The trees are like skyscrapers now," Tommy said. And he was right. Looking out the window, even if you craned your neck all the way back, you couldn't make out the top of the trees. They were too tall, and we were simply too small. There was only one door we couldn't open. It was at the end of the hallway on the second floor. No matter how much we tried, it wouldn't budge. It was locked tight. Thinking of the geography of the house, I was faintly aware of this would be the room in which we had saw the figurine of the man in. And as I looked at the locked door, a horrifying thought came over me. If everything in the dollhouse was real on the inside, would that figure be real now too? Was that a real person on the other side of that door? I thought of what the figure had looked like from the outside, a man in a black suit and a black tie, but it had a blank white face. I shuddered and pushed the thought away from my head, not daring to express it to Tommy and Jamie. And it is possible that as the three of us were walking away from the locked door, that I heard faint footsteps coming from the other side of it. "No, of course not," I told myself. "It's our own footsteps causing the house to creak. That's all." "Do you guys smell that?" Tommy said as we were walking down towards the foyer. The front door was still open. We had just finished exploring the last room of the house, the last open one at least, and we were thinking about leaving. That mad glee that had consumed us was dying off now. Curiosity was turning into anxiety, delight that turned into realization. We were exploring something unnatural, and I had the strange sensation that we were being watched.
"It smells like cookies," Jamie said.
Tommy nodded. And if there was another smell, a horrible rotten smell, It was only there for a moment before being replaced by the sweet aroma of freshly baked cookies. We followed the source of the smell and found ourselves in the homely-looking kitchen. Dim light from outside poured through the windows, but the light was getting lower and the shadows were beginning to grow. "It's still light outside," I vaguely remember in my head, "but it will be dark soon." We thought of that white blank face, those faint footsteps. I don't want to be here after dark. Sitting on the kitchen table was a plate of chocolate chip cookies. Their tall glasses of milk surrounded the plate. The sweet smell of the cookies were overwhelming. Tommy moved forward to grab one, and for a moment I wanted to scream for him to wait, but the cookies smelled too good and the thought passed. No, more like the thought was dulled by something. Tommy grabbed a cookie and bit into it. A huge smile broke out on his face.
"So good,"
Tommy said with a mouth full of chocolate. He grabbed one of the glasses of milk and greedily began to gulp it down. Then Jamie and I grabbed a cookie and began to eat it as well. We sat there in the kitchen eating and drinking our fill. Not one of us asked who could have made these cookies for us. And they sure had been for us, as there was only 3 glasses of milk. 3 glasses for 3 growing boys. And as we ate, the same mad glee seemed to come over us again, kept us rooted in our chairs. And no matter how much we ate, there always seemed to be more cookies, and no matter how much we drank, the milk never quite reached the bottom of the glass and would perfectly wash down our chocolate-filled mouths. It was dark outside when we finally finished. Dark when the plate of cookies was finally clear, except for a few pathetic-looking crumbs. Dark when our glasses of milk were finally empty. For a moment, the 3 of us just sat there in the dark, breathing heavily. Then a look of fear came over Tommy's face, but there was another look too. It was more like embarrassment.
"I think I'm done exploring now," Tommy said numbly. "I want to go home."
"Me too," Jamie said. He also looked embarrassed and afraid.
"Same," I said, also embarrassed. In that moment, I couldn't even believe that we were still inside that house, that we haven't ran out screaming the moment that we had found ourselves inside. Why the hell had we had decided to even explore this place? What the hell were we even thinking? It was embarrassing and stupid and wrong.
"Come on, let's go."
We made it to the foyer and stopped in our tracks. The front door was closed. It had been open the entire time that we had been exploring. Open the entire time that there had been light outside. But it was dark now. And the only light was the moonlight that poured through the windows of the house. And those windows, which looked so immaculate and clean during the day, seemed dusty and stained now. I reached for the door and pulled. It didn't open. I jangled the doorknob harder. Still, it wouldn't budge. It was locked, just like the room upstairs.
Oh God, the room upstairs.
Tommy tried the door and then Jamie, and then all 3 of us were pulling and banging on the door.
"Why won't it open?" Tommy screamed. "Why won't it frickin' open?"
And those fancy portraits that adorned the foyer walls truly did appear to be staring at us. And grinning, too. The portraits were grinning.
"Why did we come in here?" I said. "Why did you make us come in here, Jamie?"
"I don't know," Jamie said, still banging on the front door.
"Oh, why won't it open? Why won't it open?"
"I want to go home," Tommy said, as if trying to wake himself up from a dream. "I want to go home. I don't want to be here. I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go."
A loud, horrible noise came from upstairs. It was the sound of the door being slammed open.
"Oh God, the room," I thought. "The locked one."
The 3 of us went dead quiet. We cowered against the front door. For a moment,
The entire house was dead silent except for the pathetic sounds of our whimpering. Then, the sounds of footsteps came. Horrible creaking footsteps. They came from the far end of the hallway and grew louder and louder. Then, a man in a black suit walked out in the upper hallway and appeared at the top of the stairs. A black suit with a black tie, but it was his face that made my skin crawl. His face was completely blank. No eyes, no nose, no mouth. Just a pure white blank face. Only as the man began to walk down the steps that I noticed it wasn't entirely true. There was a seam that ran down the middle of his face. A seam not unlike the seam that ran over the top of the dollhouse that was supposed to allow it to split open. The three of us just stood there frozen, watching the man, the thing, with no face, walking slowly down the steps. And then Jamie screamed. That broke our stupor. Jamie ran for one of the entryways and I followed, but Tommy didn't move. He stood there frozen with his back towards the front door. The man with no face made it to the bottom of the steps. I whirled around. Tommy, move! I screamed. Please, move! But Tommy didn't move. He watched the man in the black suit walk towards him, almost memorized, almost as if he really didn't believe what he was seeing. Tears ran down his face as he mumbled to himself. I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. Tommy! Tommy, move! Jamie and I both yelled together from the entry. And then Tommy finally seemed to notice and hear us. And he finally seemed to realize that the thing was walking towards him. His eyes, which seemed dull, were now awakened and bright. He screamed as he tried to run towards us. It was too late. The thing with no face grabbed Tommy. What happened next only took mere seconds, but standing there watching, it felt like an eternity. Wait! Tommy screamed as the thing lifted him into the air. Please, wait! The seam that ran down the thing's face split open, revealing an endless parade of sharp teeth. So many teeth. Rows and rows of them. No! No, let me go! Please let me go! Tommy screamed as it lifted Tommy's head towards its horrible teeth. Please! The teeth collapsed onto Tommy's head. There was a sickening, crunching sound. And then Tommy's head was gone. Blood shot out of Tommy's neck like a geyser and seemed to shower the entire foyer, spraying the grinning portraits which stared down at us mockingly. The thing made a horrible wet gulping noise as the remnants of Tommy's head were being chewed and swallowed down its throat. And then the thing's face started resealing. It dropped Tommy's headless body, which fell to the floor with a horrible thud. One of Tommy's legs was twitching. It turned towards us. We screamed. We ran. The library! I heard Jamie yell. The library! We hooked down the hallway and opened the door to the library. We slammed it shut behind us and we moved one of the large sofas in front of it. Books immediately began to fall from their shelves on their own accord. Several of them sprung open and the pages flipped madly. Some of the pages were torn from their spines seemingly by invisible hands and began to fly madly around the room, pushed by an invisible wind. Will it hold? I said, looking at the door and swatting away the flying paper, which had begun to cut Jamie and I. I don't know, Jamie said, tears streaking down his face. One of his tears were broken by a piece of paper which zipped past him, cutting him right underneath his left eye. It killed him, I said, more to myself than Jamie. Oh God, it killed him. Suddenly, the flying pieces of paper fell to the floor. The books stopped falling from their shelves and the pages stopped flipping. The room went quiet. And then came the sound of creaking footsteps coming from the hallway.
closer and closer, until finally they stopped right outside the library door. Hold. Please hold, I thought. It did not hold. The door bursted open as if it was shot by a cannonball from the other side. Shards of splintered wood went flying, as did the sofa chair, which flew back and hit me. I hit one of the bookshelves, crumpled to the floor, and yelled in pain. Then I heard Jamie scream. I looked up to see the thing in the black suit lifting Jamie into the air. One of the shards of wood from the door had pierced Jamie in the leg, and blood poured down from the thing's face, splitting open, revealing those horrible rows upon rows of teeth. Jamie turned away from the teeth and looked towards me, his eyes full of tears. Then he seemed to realize something on the ground, and a look of realization broke out on his face. Jamie looked back at me. The leg! And then Jamie's head was gone. I screamed in terror, trying to crawl backwards, but only met by the bookcase. I could go no further. Jamie's blood showered the library, staining all the white pieces of paper that covered the floor a deep red. I again heard the terrible gulping noises as the thing chewed and swallowed. Then its face resealed and it turned towards me. Then I saw what Jamie had seen right before it killed him. There was a glint of silver on the ground. It was a lighter. Tommy's lighter. I had forgotten all about it. It must have fallen out of my pocket when I struck the bookshelf. Some things deserve to get burned. That's all. The thing in the black suit tossed Jamie's body to the side like a child throwing away a toy it had lost interest in. It began to walk towards me. I grabbed the lighter, pulled the flask out of my pocket, and popped the cap. The thing grabbed me with cold hands and lifted me into the air. Its face split open. I poured the lighter fluid all over the horrible teeth and down its black throat. The thing in the black suit didn't seem to notice or even feel it. Or maybe it just didn't care. It had gone numb with hunger. I flicked the lighter, but it only gave a small spark. I tried again. Nothing. Again. Nothing. Then, as it brought my head closer to its horrible sharp teeth, just as I thought I was going to be joining my two best friends, the lighter flicked on. I threw it. This time, it did feel it. This time, it did care. The thing in the black suit's head was engulfed in flames. It gave a completely unnatural cry and dropped me to the floor. So horrible of a cry that my ears began to bleed. It screamed and screamed, slamming its body against the bookshelves, causing the books to catch on fire. It tried to reseal its face, but its head kept opening and closing as the flames licked its skin, opening and closing. The thing in the black suit made one last pathetic attempt to grab me, and for a second I thought it might get me, and then it fell to the floor, its whole body now alit. And yet, as it laid there crumpled, it still screamed. And now the whole library was going up in a hellish flame. I ran out of the library and hooked my way down the hallway. I could feel the warmth of the fire behind me, and when I turned back, I saw that the fire had made its way out into the hallway and was licking the floor and ceiling of the house. I ran, and as I did, I could still hear it screaming from behind me. And for one horrible moment, I thought I heard the screams getting louder, as if the thing had gotten up and made its way out of the library and was now chasing after me. I did not look back. I made my way back to the entryway foyer, not daring to look down at Tommy's headless body, afraid that if I did, I would still see his leg twitching. And the screams behind me were getting louder, closer. The front door was open. The portraits on the walls glared down at me, no longer grinning. Their hateful eyes followed me as I ran through the front door opening. I felt that same sensation of my stomach dropping
and then I was panting and breathing on the floor of the clearing. I was out of the dollhouse. I was back in the grove. I felt warmth on the back of my neck and turned around. The entire dollhouse was on fire. Faintly, I could hear screaming, but it sounded muffled, far away. Of course, neither the authorities nor my parents believed my story. And of course, when I took them to the clearing, all that was left was the husk of a burnt-down dollhouse. That was the last day I stepped foot into the grove. The charred remains of the dollhouse were taken into evidence, but Jamie and Tommy were designated as missing children. That was the official story. Jamie's parents eventually moved back to London, and Tommy's parents never quite stopped looking for their son. Sometimes I would see Tommy's mom waiting on the front porch, looking down the road, as if at any moment Tommy was going to walk down it. The psychiatrist that had been assigned to me told my parents and myself that my story was the result of deep-seated trauma and that I was using it to cope. That even perhaps I saw what really happened to Tommy and Jamie. That I had witnessed them being abducted or hurt in some way. In a real way, by a real person. Part of me wanted to believe that. It would make things easier if it was the case. But I know what happened that night. It would be 18 years ago this autumn. 18 years since that horrible night. And in the end, I suppose it doesn't matter if anyone believes me or not. All that matters is that Tommy had been right. Some things deserve to get burnt. That is all. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the creepy story tonight. To me, this was a mixture of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Are You Afraid of the Dark? I really enjoyed this story, and I hope you did as well. If you liked tonight's video, make sure to subscribe, like, share, and of course, like always, spread me like butter. Have a good night, and stay spooky.